Bowen's Own, 95.1, GM FM.
Good morning, Bowen, and welcome to the Check-In with Sally show on 95.1 GEM FM. Today's topic, we are going to be talking about grief. So today's show may bring up memories of people, places, relationships and chapters of life that have been important to you. So please be gentle with yourself as you listen.
Absolutely.
Hey, Roxy, how you doing?
I'm good, Sally. How are you going?
Well, thank you. I think today is going to really hit some spots for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because all of us are going to or have experienced grief
of course.
And loss in our lives.
Yeah.
I think that grief can be bigger than death.
Yes.
Because the people who are left behind are the ones who have to live with mm-hmm. that loss.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think that grief can be really tough for people to process and to deal with. And I think that we'll go through lots of different things today in terms of what to expect from grief, and maybe we've got too high expectations upon ourselves already about how to be dealing with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just normalising some of those reactions and that sort of thing.
Especially if you're going through it for the first time, because I think you can sometimes really underestimate what you're going to go through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Because I think you can believe, oh, it's going to hurt a lot at the start, but then it'll just get better.
Mm.
But unfortunately, that's definitely not the way that grief works, and it can be still extremely painful many years later.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So grief is the emotional response to loss. So it's what happens when something important to us changes, ends, disappears, or is taken away. And while grief often follows the death of someone that we love, it can also show up after things like divorce or separation, miscarriage, infertility, losing a job, even retirement. Maybe it's even moving away, a serious illness, children leaving home, losing friendships, or even just losing the future you thought you were going to have.
Mm.
So I think that I really wanted to broaden today's segment rather than just focusing on death as a result of grief. I want to be really making sure everyone is aware that grief is a loss. And it can be
that's
just a loss of something that's very important to you.
Yeah, I like it because immediately I had just gone to death in my head.
Mm.
Yeah, but you're so right. Like, you can grieve in so many instances, stuff that you don't even think is going to impact you that much.
Yeah.
But it can.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Especially when it changes what you thought your future was going to look like.
Mm.
So whether it changes who you thought you were going to spend it with or how you were going to spend your life living and those types of things, it's really that change of the potential that you've lost as well that you can be grieving as well. And in many ways, and I know that we could come up with lots of cliches when it comes to grief, that it's the price of love and that sort of thing. But definitely grief is the price that we pay for caring.
Yes.
Yeah. So that when we care about something a lot, usually it means that we're going to feel the loss a lot more as well.
So yeah, don't you love it? I'm sure for everyone's probably had they're well-intending friends, well-intentioned comments, but honestly, sometimes they can drive you nuts, can't they? Like when people say, oh, you know, blah-de-blah, whatever it is, and you think, oh, please, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. We're going to run through some of those, actually.
Excellent.
Because I'd say that a lot of the time when I'm speaking with clients who are going through grief, one of the biggest things is they're like, God, people say the dumbest things to me. And or they say the most horrible or the most thoughtless or and I think that sometimes people are like, yeah, but what do I say to someone who's going through the worst possible time in their life? And that's fair because it can be really tough to know what to say, and we will get into it later, but I think ultimately it's as simple as acknowledging, I don't know what to say, but I care.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not asking how they are, because the answer is it's bad. I feel bad. Things are not good.
And that's
what we expect them really to be feeling. But most of the time we're just like, yep, we're fine, or whatever it happens to be. But I think it can really speak to somebody who's going through something if you're like, hey, I really don't know what to say because I imagine that things are so bad. Mm. But just know that I care and I'm here for you.
Yeah.
Because I think that we can feel really helpless in the face of grief because nothing can be done to fix it.
No, well, we can't, but it's just, And I do feel, because, I mean, we've all also probably not just grieved, but been beside someone who is grieving and know what they're going through, but don't want to say, sound cliche in the way you try to support them and help them. Mm. So often, yeah, I've always found I don't say much at all. I'm just there and follow through with actions, maybe, you know.
I think sometimes people really don't always like to accept help either, especially if they've been quite the strong, functional person and organised and has everything all ducks in a row. So you're kind of like, hey, can I cook you dinner, or can I bring food around, or can I do something like this, or can I help out? And they can just say no.
Mm-hmm.
So do it anyway.
That's what I was going to say.
My advice is don't ask what they want for dinner or if they want dinner. I would say rock up with dinner.
Yeah, just rock up and leave it. And if they don't eat it, that's their choice. They can freeze it for another day. But, you provided... Yeah, and chances are they will eat it.
Yeah. And if not, they can pop it in their freezer.
That's right.
When they're feeling up for it, they can always defrost it then, that's
for
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's also really, we'll talk a bit more about it later as well, but it's also being really mindful not to say things like, I understand, or I know what you're going through, or because it's, even if you've lost the same person as them, or you've gone through the same life event that's resulted in a loss,
you're
still not in their shoes.
No.
Because they're still experiencing grief in their own way.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, you can't, you cannot do that. And I also remember people, it becomes a time for other people who have lost to bring back their own feelings and tell you about their thing, and you're just not in that head space to hear that, but it comes back to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you feel sorry for them, but you just think, look, you know what, I cannot deal with that at the moment. I'm dealing with my own stuff, you know.
A lot of the time you just don't have the capacity.
Yes.
To help them or to have sympathy for them in that time. And a lot of the time it can probably feel like that person's being selfish.
Yes.
And they don't mean to be.
No.
I'm sure that it's well-intentioned to try and make that shared experience feel normalised or feel like you've got someone in your corner, or, you know, someone's in your support network that has been through it.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time when you're going through that grief, it can feel like no one understands.
Yes.
And that, not that you're the first person who's gone through it, but you're the first person who's gone through it for you.
Yeah.
In that instance.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I think it's important to remember that grief isn't a weakness. It's evidence of love and evidence of hope and evidence that something was really important to us.
Mm.
So I think if you're listening today and you've immediately thought of someone, which I think, Roxy, you were like, oh, I instantly went to losing somebody, or perhaps you're thinking about a chapter of your life that's ended, maybe that's where your grief lives. So if anyone has any questions, or if anyone wants to share their experience, feel free to text in on 0484 510 152. And we'll come back and get into it after this song.
Excellent.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
Alrighty. That was a great song to kick off with, to kick this segment off. So I think that we're talking about, so one of the hardest things about grief is not necessarily the grief itself. It's the expectation that we place on ourselves. We can tell ourselves things like, and we can also hear things like, you need to move on, or you just need closure, or you just need to stay strong and just get through it. But grief doesn't work that way, because there's no timeline, there's no finish line, and there's no deadline for healing.
No, there's not.
I see people all the time who worry that they're still grieving 6 months later, or a year later, or 5 years later.
Yeah.
And the reality is that grief changes, but it rarely disappears completely. So think about somebody who loses a parent, or even a child, or a spouse. Do you think they stop loving that person a year later? No. So because the love continues, the grief continues.
Yeah.
And even if the grief subsides, that doesn't mean your love has.
No.
You just learn to make space for that grief in your
right.
life.
Yeah.
So the goal isn't to stop caring. The goal is to learn how to carry the loss while continuing to live. And it can feel really heavy a lot of the time. It can feel like some days are never going to end.
Yeah.
And I think that, people getting told it gets easier is one of the really hardest things to hear, I think.
Yeah.
Because there's also a part of you that maybe doesn't want it to get easier, because does that mean that you're going to be happy? And, you know,
yeah, forget then, that person.
Yeah, or forget them, and then the guilt can come in and that sort of thing as well. So I thought I'd just run through a couple of myths that we tend to hear when it comes to grief and loss. And the myth number one, I feel like, is time heals all wounds. A very favourite saying that is out there. And I think instead we probably need to look at changing that to something around, you know, like time passes, but healing comes from what we do with that time.
That's a good one, yeah.
Because it's true that, I don't know if people are aware, but in the DSM, which is the diagnostic criteria and manual that we use as psychologists to diagnose people, bereavement disorder used to be in it, and we used to be able to diagnose people kind of with grief as such.
Okay, wow.
And in the most recent edition, they've removed it.
Wow.
Yeah, because whilst we can talk about how grief can have an impairment on functioning, and it really impairs people's functioning, we've removed it as a disorder because how do you categorise or write criteria for grief? Because there isn't any. And don't get me wrong, I feel like we need to talk about how we need to learn to live with grief and continue to be able to function, but we need to also recognise that grief affects everybody differently, and that people are learning to carry it in different ways. So I think that the time heals all wounds is probably not the one that we need to be talking about. Not the one that we need to be using with people.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're just, I think people just fall back on those things again because what do you say?
Because they don't know what to say.
Yeah,
they don't know what is comforting to say.
Yeah, especially if you haven't been through it yet. Do you know what I mean? Or, you know, everything's, you know, been, and I think that's probably a younger person thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you only learn as you get older and have been through more stuff, really.
Yeah. But even I think the other sort of offhand comment is it'll get better. And even if that's true, and it's true, but that people don't, that's not helpful to hear.
No.
Or it doesn't make it easier to carry that grief
by
hearing that it's going to get easier, because it's not easy now.
No.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm. Yeah.
Another myth that people hear, and this is probably more around things like relationships as opposed to death, is that you just need closure. And firstly, many people never get it, especially from relationship breakdowns, because if there's been no contact with the person, or you don't know why it all happened, or you never got the answer you were looking for, you're not going to get that closure. So sometimes that can be an impossibility. And what you need to find instead is acceptance. So it's more like, okay, that relationship ended.
Yes.
And for whatever variety of meanings that might be, this is how it happened.
Yes.
Or, you know, perhaps you lost a job for the reasons that you didn't think were fair. So, again, there's always going to be that rift there. There's always going to be that lack of repair.
Yes, there is, yeah.
Because you can be like, oh, but that shouldn't have happened, or I didn't want that to happen. So, yeah, I think that people saying that you need closure in order to move on, and, again, that word move on means to leave it all behind and just get on with your life.
Oh, yeah, look, I still hold animosity towards an employer that made me redundant.
Yeah. Redundant, that's a really good one because there's no closure there.
No, well, you're just, it's such an ugly term too, isn't it? Redundant.
Yeah.
You are no longer useful.
Yeah. You were not often, operationally and required.
I remember, it's a really hurtful.
Yeah.
Been made, and, you know, being made redundant.
Mm.
What do you do?
Mm. So, because then again, I think it's also about interpretation.
Yeah.
Because your interpretation of redundancy feels really negative, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, oh, it's quite targeted and it was about me and it's about being useless or not useful.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes it can be about changing some of the framework with which we view things, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, okay, this is actually going to be a really good opportunity for me to go and, you know, spread my wings elsewhere or, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes it can be true that it's actually your role is no longer required. I know that can, you know, changing of contracts and things, but I think it can really feel very personal.
Well, back in the day when I was made redundant, it was about like cost cutting and there was no help with the redundancy process. Like now I know there are people who look after you as you move out. And I work, I was working for Arnott's Biscuits.
Oh, yeah.
So they were a very large national organisation.
Yep.
And the role that I was in was made redundant.
Mm.
And it was, I later found out, to make way for another role for another group of people that were coming up through the ranks. So it was... Had they explained that to me, I would have felt okay.
Yeah.
But no, it was the way it was delivered was like awful.
Felt underhanded.
Yeah. Really awful. But that was how it happened. I was made redundant probably around three times during this 80s. It was the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Late 80s.
Mm.
When redundancy was rife. Everyone was, and there was the recession. There was a recession happening, so everyone was being made redundant. Mm.
And I guess what I want to point out there is that even this many years later, there's still that element of resentment.
Oh, yeah, I will not buy Arnott's biscuits. I'm not kidding. My mother stopped buying them when I got made redundant from Arnott's. Yeah, stopped.
Their bottom line has absolutely felt that.
Yes, but I'm just telling you because that's what happens.
Yeah. And look, I feel like I just wanted to point out that that's 40 years of carrying a loss.
Yeah.
And I don't want to trivialise it, though, because I guess what I want to point out is that you can carry losses like this.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I've trivialised it in my mind because I've had, like, maybe that's the way I have dealt with it, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think so it can still hurt.
Yeah, it hurts. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that anyone out there who's feeling like they should be over their grief or they should be feeling better or, you know, this shouldn't be as hard, is that we carry grief with us always and some days feel harder than others.
That's a good example.
Mm.
Yes, wow.
Yeah, for sure. One of the other myths that people say is to be strong, as though carrying grief is a weakness or letting it overwhelm you is a weakness, whereas strength isn't avoiding grief.
No.
Strength is allowing yourself to feel it.
That's such a good... I really like that.
Mm. Because that I feel like so sometimes true. You can think, oh, I've got to be strong for my family or my friends or my husband or whoever it happens to be. But I think the more you force yourself to be the strong one, you're just delaying the inevitable. You're delaying that the grief is going to hit you really hard later.
Mm.
So don't get me wrong. I think there are some times when following, especially a death, that you... might need to feel like you have to be strong to get through the memorials or the funerals or the burials or whatever it happens to be, and then you get to fall apart.
Mm.
But if you continue to feel like you have to be strong because you're supporting someone else who's in quotes grieving more than you or should be grieving more than you, you're only prolonging your pain.
Yeah, your own grief.
Yeah. And that it's okay to be falling apart together.
Mm.
And it's okay to be all feeling the grief together.
Yes.
And not to just be strong all the time.
Yeah. Is it a point where, like, sometimes families can fall apart at that point where they're, like, everyone's trying to deal with their grief individually?
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, sometimes it can lead to those fractures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes we can get, I don't want to use the word competitive, but there can be, like, but I would miss that person more because it was this person was this, this and this to me. Or why are you still so broken? Like, I need to be more broken than that, than you. Or that sort of thing. Like, there can be a bit of a misunderstanding about grief and maybe even a quantity. Like, you can be this, you know, your grief should be a 10 out of 10 because you lost your spouse. But that was my dad.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Is my grief not meant to be 10 out of 10 too? So do you know what I mean? Like, there can sometimes be that sort of thing going on as well. And I think that we just need to all try and be as understanding as we can about that everyone's going to be going through that, and it's not a
competition. I know.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah.
And we're not going to get into it today, but the other really added layer that really comes on top of that sort of thing is what happens to the estate of the person who dies can tend to create an awful amount of conflict, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that those things can really start to really put a lot of pressure and impact families a lot as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that, yeah, some of the takeaways are there's lots of myths surrounding what people can say to you about grief or what we can expect of ourselves. And if we're expecting ourselves to be strong, that you just need closure or that time's just going to heal it all, they're all myths.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that it all needs to be worked on together, and having a really good support network around you can really help with all of that as well.
And it's an individual process.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's, you can take 20 years if you like grieving.
Yeah.
Can't you, really? And, you know, if as long, you know, it could be that long that you miss that person. Mm. You'll always, well, anyway, we'll get on to that.
Yeah. We will go to a song, but just a reminder, there's no timeline and no finish line and no deadline.
That's right.
For grief.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get to, you said 20 years, but at 21 years, you're not going to miss them anymore, or you're not going to have any moments of grief for that person. So, yeah, I think that they can just be ongoing.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we come back after this song, we're going to chat about the stages of grief, which I'm sure lots of people have heard of, but we're just going to kind of run through them and explain how they work.
And don't forget, if you have got a question for Sally, text in 0484 510 152. If you've got any question about how to deal with grief, or you're going through something at the moment, she would love to hear from you. All right, here's a bit of Ben E. King, Stand By Me.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me.
We got caught up again, didn't we? Whenever we go out for a song, we start chatting and then we miss the cue. Hey, before we go back to Sally, I just wanted to mention we'd have a new monthly listen and win comp for June, a new prize. So same deal today. All you need to do is text in the secret word, which is keyboard today. And our number here is 0484 510 152. And I guess you're interested in knowing what you're going to win. It's a fabulous prize this month. It's a $200 gift voucher from Buyride, and it's been proudly donated by our sponsors, O'Brien Electrical. Plus, you get a Gem FM merch pack worth $50. And this comp runs until Tuesday, the 30th of June. And the winners will be announced on Jude's Gems with Jude on Thursday, July 2nd. So text in 0484 510 152. Secret word is keyboard. And, yeah, good luck. Let us know your name and where you're listening in from, just because we enjoy knowing where you're listening in from. Okay, we might get back to Sally.
Thanks, Roxy. So as I said before the break, we're going to chat now about the stages of grief and why they're not a checklist.
Yeah.
So most people have probably heard of the five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the biggest misunderstandings is believing that these happen in order.
Yeah.
So they don't. So you might feel acceptance one day and anger the next. You might feel okay for weeks and then suddenly feel devastated, because grief is messy and it's not a staircase. It's more like the ocean. So some days the water is calm and some days the waves knock you over. And neither of them means that you're doing grief wrong.
Mm.
And it's true that there's probably an expectation that you might go through each stage in kind of that order. And that is especially true maybe in the early days, but then you can revert straight back. Right, you can go into that kind of accepting that perhaps that person is gone, and then you can flick straight back to anger and just be like, no way, this, I'm so angry that this has happened. Or you can start bargaining and being like, but what if this had happened, or what if we'd changed that, or what if I'd reached out, or whatever it happens to be. So you can really go back and forth between those stages as well. And even if you do reach that acceptance stage, you might not always stay there. You can still go back into feeling really devastated, perhaps into that depression stage as
well.
That's
interesting. So you can go back and forth through these.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I remember thinking the infinity of never seeing that person again was really mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't wrap my head around not ever seeing that person again.
I think that brings up that whole mortality angle, that we can all feel quite invincible and that it won't happen to us and that sort of thing. And we might think that about ourselves, but then we probably also think about it, the people around us.
Yeah, well, you never think your mum and dad are going to die, do you?
Yeah.
But, yeah, when you think, oh, I'm never going to see that person again, that's what really mucked around with my head. Yeah. Like, I thought, wow, like, how can that be?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's so final.
Mm.
Is that what you mean? Like, it felt really...
Yeah, like there was... It was infinite.
Mm.
Just never. The word never, like you don't understand. You don't understand it until you're never going to do that or see that person again. Like it is very final.
Mm.
Mm.
Absolutely. And that, I think that also is the struggle with some people, and with the whole learning to live with that, learning to live with the knowledge and understanding that you aren't going to see that person again, and you're not going to talk to them again. And that's really hard.
Yeah, it's very hard.
It's really sad because, you know, so many things will remind you of them.
Oh, yeah, it's endless.
Mm. And I think that, and if you want to call that a trigger, or if you want to call it a reminder or whatever it happens to be, like, you're absolutely going to have them forever, because when that song comes on the radio, it'll still always remind you of them.
Mm.
Yeah. And whether that's, but and eventually maybe it'll turn into a nice little smile when you hear that song, rather than a flood of tears, because you can remember it with love. You can remember it with
yeah.
a smile on your face as well.
Yeah, it can come. Well, I'll give you an example. When I was downloading this music for you, I'd never heard Ed Sheeran's Supermarket Flowers.
Oh,
oh my God. I started crying.
Yeah. It's a real tear-jerker, that one. It's
oh, beautiful. My God. Like, yeah, that's unbelievable, that song.
Yeah.
Mm.
So if we think about those stages, if we think about what denial is, it's, I don't know if you've ever been there or if you've gone through it yourself when you can first get told about your loss.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know we've been talking about death a lot, but even if we broaden that out to other things where you get told that you've lost a job or perhaps you've lost a baby, a miscarriage or something along those lines, your first thing can be like, no, that can't be true.
Mm.
No, you've got the wrong person. Or no, that's not the right test result. Or are you sure that's me who you're trying to fire? Like, is it not this person?
Yeah.
Or, so you can go through that first stage, can just be categorical denial of that. That can't be true because we don't want it to be true.
Mm.
And then we can move into anger, where anger can be directed at lots of different places. So you can be angry with the world, with the universe, or if you're religious, you can be angry with God about this person being taken away or this loss that you've experienced, or you can sometimes be even angry at the person who died. Even if they didn't mean to or had nothing to do with it, you can still be angry that you are left to live without them.
Mm.
So the anger one can sometimes feel like it brings you out of the numbness a little bit and you can start to feel again, but the feelings can be those more negative emotions around anger.
Mm.
And yeah, that can. Have you experienced that sort of thing yourself, Roxy?
I was just trying to think. Who did I feel? I felt with the most recent loss, which was my mum's, which is like still 5 years ago, right? I think I actually took it out of my sister.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were having one fight after another with her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't really feel. I'm just even thinking back because you know. There was a 30-year difference between the loss of my dad and my mum, exactly 30 years. But I remember when dad died, it was, I felt really disoriented because I'd never experienced a close death of that magnitude. I was only like 25 when that happened. Mm. So it was like, wow, like, and I remember that's when I actually thought, I'm never going to see him again.
Yeah.
But I don't remember feeling remember feeling anger at that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember feeling like and honestly, I don't know that I was angry with anyone. It was more sadness.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, sometimes you don't go through each of these stages.
Yeah, no, I don't think I felt anger. It was more sadness that I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my sister getting on my nerves. So maybe that's where the anger got. I manifested that against her. I don't know. I took it out on her.
Or I guess that's just maybe where you felt it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes it can also be, you know, why did someone else get to live whereas this person died? I'm not saying you felt that way about your sister, but that can be some of the ways that people can feel angry as well.
Mm.
And then you can move through into that bargaining where you can start to really be like, but what if? And you go through every conceivable scenario in your head.
Yes.
So if the person, for example, died in an accident, oh, but like, what if they hadn't driven that night?
Oh, yeah.
What if they instead, like, someone else had driven, or they'd left an hour later, or they'd stayed at the party, or they'd done this and done that? And you can just start to go through all those what if scenarios to try and make sense. That's us trying to make sense of what's happened.
Yes.
Or to try and figure out ways where we could have prevented it. And there's never an answer to that.
That would be awful. Like that sort of scenario.
Yeah. But it can still be the same. People can be like, but why did my mum get cancer or why or whatever it happens to be or, you know, why did I have to miscarry this child and my friends didn't have any miscarriages and those sort of things. Or there's lots of those bargainings or if it's work or but what if I just tried harder or worked more hours or
you
know, had done more like this or if it's a loss of a relationship, oh, but if I had just, you know, done more of this or done less of that. So the bargaining is all that sort of talk, all that self-talk that you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can flick back into that one each time that you think about another what-if scenario as well.
Yes.
And then I guess depression might be the one that people are the most familiar with, and this is the one, obviously, where you're feeling immense sadness.
Mm.
And that's when you can, you know, find that people are having trouble to get out of bed or perhaps they're not eating and they're not sleeping and they're not wanting to see anyone, not answering their phone. Not, you know, engaging with anybody, all that sort of stuff. And that's where we can probably, that's probably the most I guess, you know, for want of a better term, stereotypical phase that people imagine grief to be.
Yes.
Is in that phase. And obviously that's the one that hurts so much.
Mm.
And that's one that's really, it probably can sometimes last the longest.
Mm.
Yeah, because we can go back in and out of that phase quite a lot, or we can stay in it for the first quite long period of time and then coming in and out of it as well.
Mm.
And then hopefully you can start to move towards the acceptance, because even though death is the most inevitable thing that we all face, it's still always such a shock.
Yeah, it is. It's shocking.
Mm.
It's shocking, yeah. I had a friend that used to call, after someone died, the fog.
Mm.
Like you'd be navigating through this fog. And how long you were stuck in the fog just depended. But she'd lost her father and she was in the fog. I remember she was going, I'm still in the fog. It was like, I think it was 7 years after she was still in the, and she recognised that she was emerging out of the fog.
Yeah.
And anyway, I was, when my mum died, she said, oh, you're going to be in the fog, right? And then sadly, 2 years after my mother died, she was diagnosed with terminal illness and died. But I remember her concern was, how are you going to deal with this? You're still in the fog.
Yeah. It's a really good one.
Yeah.
Because
it's a fog.
Yeah. And I think there'll be lots of people out there nodding and they'll be relating to that. Just about how your thoughts are murky and you're trying to just sludge through life surrounded by this cloud.
Yeah. Yeah, but I often say to my partner, I don't think I've actually even dealt with Lena's death. She was a very close friend because I was still dealing with Mum's death. I don't know, like...
Mm. But my challenge to you would be,
what
does deal with?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know because... This may sound strange, but it's now 3 years since Lena died. But when I say it, it still catches me by surprise that she died.
Yeah.
That she's dead.
Yeah.
Is that explain that one. I don't know. I sit there going, what? I think, oh, hang on, that's right, she's dead.
Mm. Because she wasn't meant to?
Maybe, I don't know.
Because whether it was her age or...
Yeah, she was young.
She was and I think sometimes that can be... Well, that person wasn't meant to die yet.
No.
So I think that that's where sometimes that shock and that it's so unexpected and so awful. Yeah, because I lost a client actually,
right?
A teenager, to a car accident, and I just remember being really shocked and so devastated for her and her friends and her family because it was so young, just taken so young.
Yes.
And, yeah, I think when I think of her, I feel a bit the same. I'm just like, how is that? How did she die so young?
How is she not here?
Yeah.
How is she not here? Like, you just think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that when I say I haven't dealt with it, it's because I haven't. Sometimes I feel like I haven't processed the grief.
Mm.
Yeah. Don't know.
And I think, again, it's is there a timeline? It feels like you're expecting there to be a timeline around that grief.
Yeah, well, I'm sort of expecting her. I don't think that's – I just don't think she's dead.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe, I don't know.
But I think you seem to be able to acknowledge that she is.
Yeah.
It's probably still just that wish that she wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that it would be nice to have her around.
So. Yes.
Yeah. We've had a listener text in and it says, hi, Sally. My dad died 3 years ago and I still cry sometimes. Shouldn't I be over it by now? Absolutely not. And I'd actually suggest that perhaps you might be asking the wrong question. So instead of asking whether you should be over it, perhaps you should be asking, am I learning to live with it?
Mm.
So because grief isn't a problem to solve.
No, it's not.
No. It's a relationship that changes. So you don't stop loving someone just because they've died. So it's completely normal to still miss them. But just because they're no longer alive doesn't mean your love's no longer alive. And doesn't mean that you're still not going to... In fact, your love can sometimes intensify with grief because perhaps you weren't aware of how important that person was to you or of how much you valued them or needed them or, you know, how important they were to you. And sometimes the grief can really highlight that. So, yeah, thanks so much for texting in and, yeah, absolutely be gentle with yourself and perhaps starting to sort of manage those expectations around being over it or that you shouldn't be crying anymore. This is your dad. Like, of course you're going to miss him.
Yeah.
And of course it's okay to be crying about that still.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to go to another song, and when we come back, we're going to talk about one of my favourite concepts when it comes to grief, and it's called Grief in a Box, and we're just going to have a chat about how that might help people sort of understand or conceptualise what grief might feel like in a long-term sense.
Cool.
Clapton with some crooning there about heaven. It's probably pretty poignant for what we're talking about today. So yeah, as I was saying, I wanted to have a chat with everyone and I want to share an explanation of grief that's really helped countless people. I want you to imagine that your grief is a box and inside that box is a button, and that button represents pain. Now imagine a ball inside the box. When the loss first happens, the ball is enormous. It fills almost the entire box, so every movement causes it to hit that pain button, or even the pain button's held on by the size of the ball in the box. Everything hurts. You wake up and it hurts. You hear a song and it hurts. You see a photo and it hurts. You go to make a phone call and remember they're gone and it hurts. The ball is constantly hitting that button. Then something happens. The ball starts to get smaller. Not because you care any less and not because you've forgotten, but because life slowly grows around the grief. So the ball still exists and it's still bouncing around inside that box. And sometimes it still hits the pain button. And initially it's still hitting it really often. But then as the ball gets smaller, as your life grows around the grief, it's hitting the button on things like birthdays, Christmases, anniversaries, but then it's all in those unexpected reminders. Could be a certain smell, could be a song, could be a place that you drive through that you forgot that you guys drove there together, yeah. Those types of things. And when that ball hits that button, the pain can feel just as intense as the beginning. And you can relive that all over again. The difference is that it just happens less often. So the grief hasn't disappeared. Life has simply gotten bigger around it.
I really like that. That makes so much sense because it does. Because one minute, yeah, it can be. As soon as when it's just happened, it is. It's like always that button is completely depressed the whole time. But, yeah, you're right. One day you turn around and you think, oh, you haven't actually thought about it for just a fraction of a minute, and you think, oh, okay, and then it returns, but you think, oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's in those moments where you're like, oh, man, I just spent 5 minutes not thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then maybe that was a tiny bit of relief, but then maybe it's followed quickly on the heels by grief. By guilt and that sort of thing. But I think it's really important for us to ignore. So I always love to draw that, actually, the ball in the box,
yeah.
For my clients, just to try and give a bit of that sort of visual representation. But if you're out there and you still don't really quite grasp what I'm saying, just Google it, grief in a box, and it will come up and it will show you. But I also sometimes say that the ball gets smaller, but sometimes the button can as time progresses.
Oh, yeah.
And so that the ball will still hit it every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever else it's bouncing around, sometimes we can still be looking back fondly on those memories that we had. And sometimes that grief can start to sort of progress into gratitude that we're so lucky to have loved them, that we're so lucky to have had that opportunity to make those memories. And not that that's meant to take away from your grief or to lessen it or anything, but sometimes I think it can be a really nice way of also being like, oh, I was actually super lucky to have those years or those moments or that time with that person.
Yes. Mm.
Or if we broaden the loss to the loss of a job, or, well, I was really lucky to gain all of that experience in that role until things didn't go well.
Mm.
But you could have made really good friends from that, or you could have got really good skills, or maybe you were sent to do some good courses and that sort of thing. So you got the experience there as well. Because grief always sort of tells a story about how important something was to us, and therefore that's why the grief can feel matches that intensity of how important it was to us.
There'll be a lot of people out there grieving their jobs with all these AI people, jobs being replaced by AI.
Mm, absolutely.
Thousands of jobs being lost,
And so I think, so what that mentioned then was, you know, the birthdays, Christmases, and anniversaries.
Yeah.
I guess I just want to say that I've also had clients who are saying it can be the week before their birthday sometimes.
Yes.
When all of a sudden you look at the date because you write it down for the next week, or you see that your milk expires on that date or something, you're like, oh, my God, it's their birthday next week.
Mm.
Or it's our anniversary next week. And when I say anniversary, that could be anything from the anniversary of the day they died, or perhaps it's your wedding anniversary, or the date you got together if it's a relationship and that sort of thing. So I think sometimes it can be the week leading into it can actually be really tough, not just the day that it happened.
Yeah.
So I guess I also want to normalize that grief can be really, really unexpected in that way, that it doesn't adhere to birthdays and Christmases and anniversaries. It can also just be those completely unexpected days where you just wake up and you can feel it all over again.
Mm.
You feel like you just lost them again.
Mm.
And that it's okay that these days can really hit you like a ton of bricks. And I think that they're the most important ones to be really gentle with yourself and really care. And whether that means, hey, actually, I just need to take today for me. I can't get up and make, you know, make all my life happen. I can't get up and go to work, or I can't get up and make sure everything's perfect at the house, or that, you know, the kids today can maybe just have tuck shop rather than me making them their lunchbox, or whatever it happens to be. If you need to look after yourself and prioritize yourself that day, then that's what I encourage you to do.
Yeah, so important.
Yeah. I think the other thing is that some people, sometimes we talk about, do we lean into the grief or do we try and avoid it? And I think that's a really important one. So when you are feeling like this, do you go and do you get out your phone and just stare at pictures, and do you put on their favorite music, and do you just lean into the skids as such and really let yourself feel that grief?
Or do you try such a good question.
Or do you try and cheer yourself up? Do you try and be like, okay, I'm not going to think about them because I need to get out of this?
That's funny you say that, because I read something, lean into the grief. So I tried, and I don't know, I've sort of undecided on that. So what do you reckon, Sally? Like, what?
I think we can spend way too much time not letting ourselves feel.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, I feel really flat today. Okay, let's go do stuff to make sure I don't feel flat. So I think that grief can be a bit different in that it can be honouring to them to lean into the grief.
Yes.
And be like, actually, you know what? I'm going to put on their favourite songs, and I'm going to cook their favourite meal, and, you know, I'm going to bring up photos or videos and really immerse myself in their memory. So I'm not going to say that's what you should do, because, again, grief is such a personal experience, but
it's okay to do that.
It's okay to do that. Mm. It's okay to take that time.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's other sort of fascinating, I guess, strategies that you can use. That's, I guess, what that can also be called is sort of like giving yourself a grief window.
Because
when it can feel like all that you're doing is grieving, and that only thing that you feel is grief, but ultimately there is your life that needs to continue being lived. Like, one of the suggested strategies can also be, hey, I want you to sit down at a certain time, and I want you to play the saddest song you absolutely know on repeat for 15 minutes, and I want you to bawl your eyes out during that time if you want to cry. And I just want you to be completely immersed in that feeling of grief for 15 minutes.
I love that.
And then when the timer goes off, you're going to be like, right, I've grieved today. And not just not saying that you can't do any more, but just be like, you got it all out. It was really cathartic. You did a big vent. You spent a really good, dedicated amount of time feeling the feelings. And then perhaps you'll feel like you've kind of vented and you feel a bit lighter. And then you can perhaps then do other things with your day.
I really like that. I like that strategy, because I think it could be quite beneficial to do that. Especially in the early stages, like just have a good cry session and not try to, because often, see, I'll tell you this other thing that happened. I remember while Mum was dying, we had people coming in to look after her, and I started crying anyway. My sister offers me a tissue, and this lady said, you know, this is from this caring, I can't remember, they were from the in-home team that looked, anyway, she goes, you know, you should never offer someone who cries a tissue, because you're trying to wrap up the way they're feeling. You're saying, hurry up and finish crying, not allowed to cry. And I thought, I remember almost laughing, because I thought, that's I never took it like that. I just thought, oh, they're trying to. And then I thought, oh, well, maybe people do offer you a tissue to stop you from crying. I don't know, but yeah.
I remember you telling me.
Have I told you this story already? Yes.
How much it hit me that it's a really fascinating social concept.
Yeah.
You know, that culturally we want people to stop crying.
Yeah.
So when you think about if your kid falls over and skins their knee, or if your mate's crying about the breakup, or if someone, we inevitably are like, okay, it's okay, come on, you know, it'll be right, and, you know, just stop crying and all that sort of stuff. And I feel like you are asking people to hurry up their grief.
Yes.
Or to stop making us feel so uncomfortable.
Mm.
You know, because I would say, I'm going to generalize here and say that most of the time when people see someone crying, we feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Right?
And we want it to stop, because we want to cheer them up, and we want them to stop feeling sad, and we want them to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I want us all to picture, imagine just sitting down next to that person and just holding their hand and letting them cry.
Yeah.
Until they're finished, until they're done, until they feel like their crying has reached its end, its natural end, rather than, and I think that as, if you imagine yourself as the crier, we also don't want to make people uncomfortable. We don't want to be like, oh, you don't need to, you know, I'm going to stop crying so you don't have to show me pity, or so you don't have to show me sympathy, or so you don't have to comfort me. Whereas I think we'd actually all be a lot better off if we cried until we were finished crying and someone sat with us during that.
Yeah, well, I have to say, I used to give people tissues. I wouldn't shove it in their face, but I'd just put a box close by to say if they needed to. But I have to be honest, I don't even do that anymore. I if they want one, they'll ask for it, and then I'll go get one.
Yeah. Because I think we actually talked about the whole snot factor.
Yes. Oh, my God, my memory. See? Sorry, Sally.
No, I don't know if we talked about it on the radio. I love that you've brought this up because I think it's actually perfectly times in with the giving yourself a grief window.
Yeah.
It's because whilst I'm saying that the timer might go off and you should not, well, you not should, but yeah, maybe you'll stop your tears and move on and stop. Not move on, but stop. I also don't offer tissues during my sessions either.
Right.
The box is definitely there.
Yes.
It's available to them, and they sometimes will be like, hey, do you have tissues? And I'll be like, oh, they're just there
for me.
I'll never hand one.
Yes.
And inevitably, the amount of people that apologise for crying in my sessions is 90% of people.
Wow.
I reckon would say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, I'm going to cry. And then my line is always, I make people cry for a living.
Yeah.
Because I want to normalise.
Yeah.
Of course there's going to be that happening.
Yeah, of course.
And if you've got someone who's going through a loss, of course they're going to be upset.
Yeah.
And of course that could mean tears.
That's it. That's right.
Mm. Yeah. I think that there's definitely people out there also who feel like they can't let go and they can't cry because that means that they've let go.
Mm.
But also I have people who are scared that they won't be able to stop themselves from crying.
Right.
So they'll start and never be able to stop.
Yeah.
Because the grief feels so overwhelming and it feels like such a dam breaking sometimes when you cry that they feel like it'll never, ever stop leaking out. So that's always my encouragement for people. If you've got someone who's crying because of anything, really, sit with them.
Yes.
Put your arm around them or hold their hand or just be there.
Yes.
But
yeah, absolutely. That's the bet. That is the most amazing thing I reckon you can do for anyone is just sit there quietly hugging them. That's it.
Sit with them in their pain.
Yeah. That's the best gift you can give, I reckon.
So thank you for bringing that up, Roxy, because I'd forgotten that you'd said that, and I feel like
I forgot that I'd told you.
Yeah. It's a really wonderful thing for us to talk about because I think a lot of the time we can feel like a burden or we can feel like we're an inconvenience to people when we're upset or when we're sad or when we're crying, whereas that's completely normal human behaviour to cry.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, as a reaction to sadness or anger or happiness. Like, there's lots of reasons that we cry. And I think just having someone sit with us in that and be there with us in it, not trying to fix it, not trying to solve it, not trying to stop it, is really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I think we will go to another song, and then when we come back, we're going to really touch a bit more base on the losses we don't often talk about that are probably much more likely to people are being told just to get over, or why is that impacting you, or just move on with it, or that sort of thing too. So we're definitely going to look at that.
All right.
I took the supermarket flyers from the windowsill. I threw the day-old tea from the cup. Packed up the photo album Matthew had made. Memories of a life that's been loved. Took the Garrett Wilson cars and stuffed animals. Pulled the old ginger beer down the sink. Dad always told me, don't you cry when you're down. But Mom, there's a tear every time that I blink. Oh, I'm in pieces, it's tearing me up. But I know a heart that's broke is a heart that's been loved. So I'll sing hallelujah. You are an angel in the shape of my mom. When I fell down, you'd be there holding me up. Spread your wings as you go. When God takes
takes you back, you'll say hallelujah, you're home. Lost the pillows, made the bed, stacked the chairs up, folded your nightgowns neatly in a case. John said he'd drive, then put his hand on my cheek and wiped a tear from the side of my face. Now I hope that I see the world as you did, 'cause I know a life is a life that's been lived, so I'll sing hallelujah. You were an angel in the shape of my mom. When I fell down, you'd be there holding me up. Spread your wings as you go. When God takes you back, say hallelujah, you're home. To see the person I have become, spread your wings, and I know that when God took you back, he said, hallelujah, you're home.
Thank you.
right, time after time. So during the break, we had someone very brave text us in, and Jude has written, "I just want to say, when my 7-year-old daughter was killed, I thought my world would end, until I realised I still had 2 children at home who were grieving too, and that pulled me out of my funk. Firstly, I just want to say I'm so incredibly sorry for the loss of your daughter, Jude. That is inconceivable, and I just don't think there are words big enough for the grief of losing a child. And I guess what I hear in your message is something that many grieving parents describe, and it's the feeling that your world is completely shattered and has ended, and you're wondering how you could possibly keep going. And then somewhere in all of that pain, you're remembering that there's still people who need you, love you, relying on you. And that strikes me is that you haven't said that your grief has disappeared. You've haven't said it became okay. What you've described is that you found a reason to take the next breath, and then the next one after that, and then the one after that. And sometimes that's what survival looks like. And yeah, it's not being healed and it's not being over it, because you don't ever get over something like a loss like that. And it's just kind of finding a reason to keep moving forward and to keep showing up for the children who are here, and still being completely heartbroken for the child that you've lost. So yeah, thank you so much for texting in. And I think that it's really hard to imagine someone's pain when it's that.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, Roxy and I both got pretty sad reading that message. And yeah, I think that hopefully, Jude, if you ever needed to reach out for any help, there's lots of support services available, even though I don't know how long that's been. And I think the only thing I'll say is that pulling you out of your funk, that grief isn't a funk. It's you weren't doing anything wrong, and it wasn't that you were too sad. It was you went through one of the most catastrophic things that any living person can go through.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it means that, yeah, you're still continuing to live your life. Doesn't mean you've left her behind. It just means you're carrying her with you. And, yeah, thanks for trusting us with such a personal part of your story today.
Yeah, thanks, Jude.
Yeah, thanks, Jude. So, yeah, we're going to then have a chat about some of the losses that we don't always talk about, and we were talking about that from the start, that typically when we talk about loss, we think about death. But we're also going to talk about losses that don't come with sympathy cards, and the losses that people expect us to just get over, or at least we are surprised when they're not sometimes. Yes. And sometimes it can be the end of a marriage, which I don't think we expect people to be getting over, but sometimes we can be like, oh, but it was obviously not good if it ended. But that's not always true for both people within a marriage. Sometimes it can be the friendship that quietly disappears. You know, you keep on reaching out to that person and they don't be reaching back, and that can be a really sad time.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you lose a big part of your support network. The infertility journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes we can be, I don't know, a little bit dismissive of people who are going through those journeys, whereas for them it's everything. It's their whole world at that time. And that they can go through the ups and downs in that are really catastrophic, like so big, because the waiting time to see if it's worked, and then the grief over it not working again, and then the hope that you get when you try again. And yeah, you can go through those, they're really emotional cycles to be going through. Sometimes it can be the miscarriage that only a few people knew about, because I would say actually historically we've been told that we shouldn't tell anyone about our pregnancy until we're 12 weeks along, because unfortunately 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage. But I'm hoping that that's changing now, because why wouldn't we be telling people early, so that if things don't go the way that we were hoping, we've got that support network there
to get us
through.
It's almost, again, like it feels shameful.
Yeah.
Do you reckon? Like,
unfortunately.
You know, if you miscarry, there's shame involved in that. But there's no, I think, you know, that's probably a time when you probably need more support than ever.
That's what I always thought. So
especially, like, if you're a new parent, like, this is the first time you've fallen pregnant, and then that happens. Like,
yeah,
it's weird.
It's a really interesting, concept, to be sure. Because I feel like you'd want support around, so firstly you want everyone's excitement.
Yeah.
Because it's so exciting to have fallen pregnant. And then if things aren't going to go the way that you were hoping to, you've got the people's support around you.
Mm.
I know that some people can say, oh, yeah, but if you tell everyone, then you have to try and tell everyone that you're not pregnant anymore, and that can be really painful.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that. I think if you put it out into your entire network and universe, it can be – some people can run into, you know, 4 weeks, a couple of months later and be like, how's your pregnancy going?
Yes.
But you're not pregnant. I think that can be really tough.
Yeah.
But I think that definitely sharing with your closest – your nearest and dearest can be really vital. I think I have an interesting story that I had from a client a long time ago now. She said that she suffered a miscarriage before she had any children.
Mm.
And yeah, it was, you know, devastating to her, and she was sad. But I think it was also, oh yeah, but this can happen to, you know, 25% of pregnancies and that sort of thing. And then she had a healthy child, and then she had another miscarriage after that, and it hit her much, much, much harder.
Mm.
And we spoke in session about how it's because she understood the loss of the potential this time.
Yes.
So she already had the child, and she already knew what she was going to be missing out on by having that second miscarriage. So I think that what loss can really equate to is also the loss of the potential.
Mm.
So the loss of that potential child, or the loss of the career trajectory that you thought you had within that company, or perhaps it was the loss of the retirement that you thought you were going to have.
Yes.
And that can be a really big one. And I would even link that up with death as well. And sometimes it's, you hear these really awful stories about people retiring and then one of them dies.
Yes.
And so they'd planned this whole beautiful retirement together. They'd saved up all this time, worked hard all their lives, to only then have that ripped away.
Mm.
And so not only are you grieving the loss of your spouse, you're grieving the loss of this beautiful life that you had planned, where neither of you were working. So hopefully that would have meant probably less stress. You're probably secure financially. And all of a sudden, all of that is just gone.
Mm.
And yeah, you've lost that person and lost that part. Your identity was, you know, most of your identity was probably tied up in them as well. So there's a lot of losses to go through there. So a lot of the time, it's not just one thing that you've lost. There's lots of underlying and overlapping features of that as well.
Yeah.
And, because some of these things you can prepare yourself for, but other things you really can't. Like, to all the parents out there who have kids who are leaving home, you can probably think to yourself, oh yeah, but I had like 18, 20, however many years to prepare myself for this, but there's probably still quite the loss, feeling of loss when they're moving out and your house is really quiet.
Yeah.
And you haven't got those people relying on you anymore.
Mm.
And you're not organizing things for them, or you're not helping them as much as what you thought you were.
Mm.
So that can be the empty nester syndrome stuff is really,
is real.
Is very real for people, for sure.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we don't talk about what it can feel like, the loss that you can feel when you experience a trauma or an illness or a disease, something where your life has changed really significantly, or perhaps you've lost the version of yourself that you were, and now you need to adapt to the new,
to this new version,
the new version of you. So you can be grieving the loss of your past self, or the loss of your health, and those types of things as well. So there's definitely lots of different losses out there that sometimes people are like, oh, but you'll be right.
Yes.
Or just get on with it, or just adapt, or just be flexible, or all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And whilst we are extremely adaptable creatures, we can still be not okay that it's all changed for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the way, honestly, sometimes the throwaway lines people give you can be, are really annoying, aren't they? Like, oh, you know, don't worry, you'll find some. Well, you know, that discounts what you're feeling, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In many ways.
I think what you're about to say there is, like, if you've lost a relationship, oh, they weren't the one. There's plenty more fish in the sea.
Yeah.
Or someone else will rock up, or all those types of things. Whereas for you in that moment, you might have thought that person was your person.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And now, now they're not.
And yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, so you're trying to reconcile the fact that the person who you thought might have been your soulmate, and you think there's no one out there better than them for you, is now gone.
Yeah.
Or is gone with someone else even, which is can sometimes not feel worse, but it definitely can feel horrible.
Pretty bad,
pretty bad. And, I think that it's really important that we recognise that all these losses matter and that they deserve space, because grief isn't just about death. It's about losing something that mattered.
Mm.
And that can be, so many different things in our lives, for sure. So I wonder if you've ever felt grief for something that didn't die. Was it a dream? Was it a relationship? Was it a future that you thought you were going to have? And I want anyone to text in to see if there was something that really stuck with you. That's something
that'd
that
be
you
interesting,
found really
yeah.
hard to carry. That wasn't necessarily a death, but it was a loss. So I think we'll go to a song, and when we come back, we'll see if anyone's texted in. Otherwise, we're also going to talk about how to support somebody who's going through grief.
Yes, very good question. And don't forget, our secret word for today is keyboard, and you go in to win, or go in for the chance to win a $200 gift voucher to Byrite, and that's been proudly sponsored by O'Brien Electrical.
Oh, the fields of barley. You can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while among the fields of barley.
Listening to The Check-In Show with Sally on 95.1 Gem FM. If anyone wants to text in, feel free on 0484 510 152. We're just going to have a chat now about how to support someone who's grieving. We've kind of touched on it throughout the show today, because when someone's grieving, we often feel pressure to say the right thing because we don't want to hurt them and we don't want to make it worse and all those types of things. But the truth is, there is no perfect thing, because people don't need solutions. They need connection. So instead of saying everything happens for a reason, which that's just a horrendous, please don't say that to people.
Yeah.
I'd really rather you try, this must be really hard. Because sometimes it's just about acknowledging their pain.
Yeah, that's right. You just, yeah, absolutely.
And you don't need to follow it up with how to make that pain less or how to make that hardness feel easier. It can just be, hey, this must be really hard for you. I can't imagine what you're going through. So the can't imagine bit is actually can be really crucial words to use because they do feel like they're the only person who's gone through this type of grief before.
Yes.
Because no one has gone through their exact grief. No. So when you say things like, I can't imagine what you're going through, they feel like you're trying to imagine it, but that you aren't saying that you know what they're going through.
Yeah.
And that can feel more comforting to people.
Yes.
So this must be really hard. I can't imagine what you're going through right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to write that down. No, because I tell
everyone
you
get
what,
your pens out.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, when you do want to contact someone and, you know, when you first hear about it, often, like, what I try to do is just text first and then call because, like, if it's just recently happened, you think, they don't want to speak to anyone, but they, you know, just knowing that you're thinking of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always just, I like words. I mean, I've actually texted that before, but sometimes your brain just doesn't get there. But they're great words.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's really, in my experience of hearing people who are going through grief, what unfortunately does tend to happen is that everyone has the same thought that.
And no one calls.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
So everyone can kind of feel the same way and be like, oh, I don't want to overwhelm them and I don't want to make them answer a call that they're not up for answering and all that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, what can sometimes tend to happen is that people aren't reaching out.
Right.
Because they don't want to bother them.
Okay.
But then the person feels like maybe people aren't caring or maybe people don't want to support them or whatever it happens to be.
So maybe just call. And if they don't want to, they just don't answer.
That's right.
And then you can follow up with a text.
Because at least a missed call is evidence that people are trying to show up for you.
Well, that's me next time then, yeah.
And even if they answer and you can tell that they don't want to be on the phone very much, just be like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I'm thinking about you. I can't imagine what this is like and that it must be incredibly hard. I want you to know I'm here for you.
Yes, okay.
Okay, and I'll check back in a couple of days.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just things like that. See how there was no questions in there?
Yeah, there are no questions. Yeah.
It's just letting them, just telling them. Tell them that you're there for them. Tell them that things are really hard. Tell them that you can help them if they are up for it.
Yeah.
But I like the text message thing too, because a lot of the time people are like, but what do you say in a text message? Do you say, how are you? No.
No.
We know how they are.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it's still texting very similar things. I'm thinking of you.
Yeah, can't imagine how hard this is.
Yep. If today's really tough, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
Yep. If you want to chat, if you want to walk, if you want to eat, if you want to, whatever it happens to me, I'm here.
Or I'm just bringing over a pot roast for you. I'll be there at 5.
Yep. If you don't answer the door when I knock, I'm going to leave it on the deck for you.
Yeah.
Yep. No pressure.
Hmm.
I think the no pressure thing when it comes to asking, you know, do you want to, can I bring a coffee around? No pressure.
Yeah.
Lets them know, hey, like, do I feel like chatting today?
Yes,
or do I act? And sometimes hopefully they can just write back, drop the coffee off and go.
Yeah.
Yes, I want the coffee. No, I don't want the company. But then there'll be people who are desperate for company as well.
Yeah.
People who feel very alone or who can be feeling really lonely, and they'll be definitely wanting more people around them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think always keeping the door open for support, not forcing it, and trying to be a bit more aware of the power that our words can have.
Mm.
And then so another one, sometimes we can, if someone's been going through a really terrible illness and then they die from that illness, sometimes we can say at least they're not suffering.
I know. Oh.
And even if that's true, instead try something like, tell me about them.
Yeah.
Tell me your favorite thing about them, or tell me a really good memory of them, because even it's probably true that they're not suffering anymore. But I think sometimes it can be better to invite them to talk about something really fun, something really nice that they loved, or just tell me about them.
Yeah,
tell me what it was like. Or yeah.
Well, the other favorite is they lived a long life.
They had a good innings.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but honestly, the age doesn't really matter, does it? Like, no. When you lose someone, you lose someone.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if they were, you know, 80, 100, 120.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Because I think that's the kind of part of us that somehow wants to justify how sad we should be based on how that person's life was lived.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, did they suffer or did they not? Or were they old or were they young and all that sort of stuff? Whereas it was still a loss.
Yeah.
And the people who lost that person can still be as devastated as if they lost them at 40 as they lost them at 80.
Yeah.
Because they're still not in your life anymore.
Yeah.
Like you were saying before, it's so finite.
Yes.
It's over. They're not there anymore.
No.
Yeah. And I sometimes feel like if you don't know what to say at all, it can be something like you can acknowledge that. I don't know what to say, but I care.
That's a nice one, yeah.
Yeah. Because if you don't want to say the wrong thing, don't say anything. I don't want to say don't say anything at all, but say something like, I don't know what to say. I'm here. Tell me about them. This must be really sad. It must be really hard. You know, I don't know what to say, but I care.
Yeah.
We can say these things instead of everything happens for a reason or they're in a better place or starting a sentence with at least.
Yes, that's a beauty, isn't it? At least, blah.
Yeah. At least they had a couple of months after retirement, before they died. Or I don't even know what words to say, or at least.
At least they didn't suffer long.
Yeah.
That was one. At least they didn't suffer long.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. Or at least you've still got two kids.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, people, unfortunately, can really put their foot in it when it comes to providing support with someone with grief. So I think just people often worry that they're going to remind somebody of their grief. I promise you this. They have not forgotten.
No.
They are definitely still grieving, or they are definitely still sad. And speaking the person's name is often a gift.
Yes.
Because not only do sometimes people not reach out because they don't want to bother you, they don't talk about the person because they're so worried about making you sad. But all of a sudden to the person who's grieving, they can feel like, well, these people have forgotten them, or they don't want to talk about them, or they don't care anymore. So unfortunately, there can be this real misalignment between people genuinely caring but not showing how they care, and the person on the receiving end feeling like people don't care. Let's just say that you do speak about them and you tell a story and it makes that person cry.
Mm.
That's okay. You're not creating pain.
Yeah, it's probably not out of pain that they're crying. They're just crying because they're probably grateful to actually talk about that person.
Mm. I think they'd be desperately wanting to talk about that person so they can relive those memories and remember them. And
absolutely.
Still feel like they're a part of their life.
Mm.
So, yeah, I feel like if there's things to take away from today, it's please reach out to the people who are going through a loss or have been through a loss and just letting them know that you're there for them, that things are really tough right now, and that you might not know the right thing to say, but that you definitely care.
Yes.
Yeah. And to not feel like you can't talk about that person.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you don't know whether it's the right thing, you can even just be like, hey, do you want to talk about them today? Because I had this really fond memory of them that I'd love to share with you, and just check in to see if they're up for it. And if they're like, actually today's not a good day for that, be like, no worries, and then you can check back in later to see if it is.
Then you bring that casserole over.
That's right.
Yeah.
And again, always seeing if they want your company, but also being cool with just dropping it off.
Not to take offense at anything during those first few days, weeks, months. You know, cause as someone that is supporting someone who has experienced loss.
If they're not reaching out to you and if they're not answering your calls or your messages, it's important to try and not take that personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this is how they're surviving right now.
Yeah, they may not have the strength, the emotional strength to do it, or the physical strength. They may not be sleeping.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for all the people out there who can't cook casseroles or lasagnas or stews or any of that sort of stuff, get a Woolies order delivered that's got some frozen meals in it.
Yeah.
Or go and grab some stuff.
Takeaway.
Some groceries or some takeaway and go and drop it off.
Drop it off.
Yeah. So there's definitely ways around that side of things as well.
Mm.
Yeah. And I guess if one thing that we really want people to know is that grief isn't something you're expected to carry alone.
Mm.
And sometimes your support can come from friends and family is usually the one that happens most often. Sometimes it can come from people who are truly understanding of what you've been through.
Mm.
And that can be someone who's lost so they've lost a spouse as well, or perhaps they've lost a child as well, or a friend or whatever it happens to be, a parent. But if you're struggling, there's actually really good grief support services available. If you feel like you... Because I think what can also end up happening is that people are like, I can't talk about this anymore with my friends and family because they've heard it all before.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to burden them anymore, or I don't want to say the same thing over and over because nothing's changed. I'm still sad. They're still gone. This still sucks.
Yeah.
And I actually have people who tell me that.
Yes.
So I think that if... I guess what I'd try and reassure you is that your friends are still always there for you.
Mm.
But if you feel like you need to talk to someone who's maybe just a bit more impartial, or, you know, who's not there for you in that friend sense, but there for you in that professional sense, there's definitely options. Of course, you can go talk to your GP about getting a referral for a mental health treatment plan and going and seeing your local psychologist. There's also a national grief support line. So it's a free Australian service offering grief support and counselling. And the phone number is 1-300-845-745. So the grief line supports people experiencing all kinds of grief and loss, which is amazing. So it's not just about bereavement. So it's not just about the loss of somebody.
Yes.
It can be about those other losses that we were talking about. Because sometimes it can be really good just to talk to a stranger about it and just absolutely download, because they've never met this person, they don't know anything about them, and it can actually be a really wonderful opportunity to tell memories. Like, I'll have people who one minute they're crying about the loss and the next they're laughingly telling me about one of their favourite memories, and it can be a really beautiful thing to tell a stranger about.
Yeah, absolutely.
To describe that person that you've lost to them. Of course, there's always Lifeline, so that's... If you're struggling emotionally, and particularly if that grief can start to feel overwhelming, and that Lifeline number is 13 11 14. And then there's support for parents and families after the death of a child. I thought I'd mention this one really specifically after Jude's message, and that's the Compassionate Friends Australia, and that not everyone knows that that one exists. So jump onto their website and just typing in the Compassionate Friends Australia and see what comes up for you there. And that's being able to access that service can be really about specifically the loss of a child.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of different other options as well. Red Nose. Remember the Red Nose Foundation?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like people, that's probably not, I haven't heard about that in a long time.
No.
I thought
do
when
they
I was
still
researching this. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's for support after miscarriage, stillbirth, SIDS, and infant loss.
I remember it was for SIDS. It started off as a, and it was huge because it was the first themed day of its kind, like Red Nose Day, and then after that, like then all these other
days became
these days. But that was the first, and they used to put out those big red noses, buses would have them, cars would have them, they were everywhere.
I remember wearing them even when I was in primary school.
So
that's another really specific one. So for anyone out there who's suffering from the loss of from a miscarriage or an infant or that sort of thing, there's a Red Nose Foundation's really a good one for you guys to be reaching out to. And then just locally, there's also Relationships Australia, Headspace, and then our local psychologists and counsellors. So, many counsellors, many psychologists and counsellors and social workers can provide that access to provide grief and loss counselling as well. And, that's really important for people to reach out if they feel like, even if you just don't feel like you're coping okay, even if you're just making an appointment. And I've had someone who's made an appointment with me only 2 weeks after a loss, and they're like, oh, I just thought I should come and see you because I'm really sad and I'm really devastated. I'm like, you absolutely should be. And I'm not going to pathologize grief. So it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be devastated. And it's okay to feel like you're not coping. That doesn't mean you have to come and see somebody. But I think I loved the help-seeking behavior, but I also wanted to normalize, hey, you've just been through a really significant loss. It's okay to not be feeling okay.
Yeah.
So, whether it doesn't, there's no timing around when you should see somebody.
Mm.
It's just if you feel like that's your next step, then that can be a good step as well.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear from someone about the listeners on this one. What helped you most through grief? Was it friends? Was it family? Was it counselling? Was it faith? Was it time? Or was it a support group? So I think that that can really be beneficial for everyone to hear about. So feel free to text in on 0484 510 152. We'll go to a song, and when we come back, we will wrap up because we're nearly done for the day.
I know. It's gone very quickly, Sally.
You're catching the end of the check-in show with Sally on Gem FM 95.1. We had someone text in and they said, "Hi Sally, sometimes I feel okay and then suddenly I feel guilty for laughing or enjoying myself. Is that normal?" And the answer is, it's incredibly common. because life is meant to still have laughter and a sense of joy. So many people feel guilty when they experience joy after a loss, almost as though being happy means that they're forgetting or they're not missing that person enough. But joy isn't betrayal. You can miss someone and laugh. You can carry grief and still have good days. And in fact, that's often what healing looks like, is that it's not choosing grief or joy, it's learning to hold both. So as we've been kind of talking about before, it can be those moments where you're like, oh, I just laughed for real for the first time since that person left. Because I think all of us out there who've suffered from a loss, you can remember all the fake laughter, or, you know, the smile that didn't reach your eyes, or, you know, that you didn't, you just faked your way through some of that for a while. And then I think after you've been through a really tough or dark period of time and you have your first laugh, it can be a real light bulb moment. You're like, oh man, that's the first time I've actually laughed since we lost them, or since I lost them. And so it's absolutely normal to have those experiences, and it's okay to be carrying both grief and joy at the same time. That doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean you don't miss them. It doesn't mean you're not grieving them. It just means that you had a moment of light in your day. And that's okay.
Look, honestly, sometimes it's good to have a bit of comic relief. Can I just tell you this little story? Well, when Mum was dying, I've got two stories. I'll tell you this one. But anyway, part of the Italian tradition is you get a priest over to do the rosary on while they're, so it gives them passage to the next world, right, to the afterlife. Anyway, I remember we had to say a Hail Mary. You have to say, I think, five Hail Marys and then an Our Father, and it continues for five rounds, right? And I remember saying the Hail Mary, but, and I'm sorry about this, but I hadn't said it for such a long time that I couldn't remember it anyway, and I could tell others in the family couldn't remember it either. And look, my mother is dying there, like lying there dying, and I actually almost burst into laughter while we were doing this very serious, sad thing. And anyway, I remember people looking at me go, and then I pretended it was a cough because I honestly, anyway, that night, so the next, that night Mum died and we were having a dinner that the following night at my place. And anyway, just to break, because we were, you know, incredibly sad, incredibly, and so I told that story and anyway, we all started laughing because they had heard me laugh and they knew, like, what is she laughing about?
Yeah.
And I told them that it was because I thought everyone had forgotten how to say the Hail Mary. So anyway, that's sometimes that sort of laughter happens in the face of, like, enormous grief.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. It does definitely break through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, or sometimes it can be, you know, if someone does something, you're like, oh, they would have loved that.
Yeah.
And then so you want to laugh on their behalf almost.
Yes. Yeah. I could imagine Mum would have thought that was hilarious. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's hopefully that brought a little bit of warmth to an otherwise really tough.
There was, I mean, it was tough, but yeah, we all had a bit of a laugh and
yeah. I think laughter can be really powerful for people, and can really help with that healing process.
Yeah,
for sure. So people often ask when grief ends, and I don't think that's the right question, because the better question might be, how do I build a meaningful life around this loss? Because we still want to be living meaningful lives, even if we have lost potentially the best person in it. Or even if, can I build a meaningful life even though my future no longer looks the way that I thought it would from a loss of something else? Whether it's loss of a relationship or a job or a child or whatever it happens to be, but it's about asking, how do I build a meaningful life around this? Because grief becomes part of our story. It's not really just something that we, it's not the whole story, but it's just part of it. And it's definitely not something that we should be trying to close down and put to the back so that it doesn't impact us anymore, because we're going to be carrying that with us for the rest of our lives. And how do we build our life around that? So we don't move on from grief. We move forward with it.
Yes, that's such a good... Yes.
Always carrying it. You know, we always talk about baggage.
Yes.
And we kind of, a lot of the time we talk about it negatively.
Yes, we do.
That we carry baggage into new relationships is usually when that is sort of mentioned. But I would say that we, like, grief is our baggage and we're carrying these heavy bags with us, and that they can be pretty heavy sometimes, but they can get lighter. as our journey progresses. And yeah, I think that grief is definitely something that, and loss is something that we carry with ourselves. And it's about how we, who the and the people around us that can help us carry that.
Yeah,
well, that's, not just carrying it alone.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, actually, because like you can put down the bags for a bit and move forward.
Mm.
They're still there, but you know, you can go back and collect them and bring them forward with you again.
Mm.
And then someone else may be there to help you carry one of the bags.
That's right. Hopefully we do have that. All those friends and family around with us that they can kind of grab one end of the bag and you have the other and you can carry it together.
Yeah, I really like that.
Mm. And over time, there's going to be room for new memories. And I think sometimes people can, that can be a bit scary.
Mm.
That they, oh, but I'm going to have to build new memories, and the new memories aren't going to have this person in them.
Mm.
Is that going to make me forget them? Well, no. But that's just what life is like. You are going to have new memories and new relationships, new experiences, new joys, all of those things. And the person that you've lost won't begrudge you any of that.
Yes.
In fact, a lot of the time people even they're doing their reflection in these sessions with me, and they're like, I know that they actually wouldn't want me to be this sad.
No, that's right. Well, they wouldn't when you think about it.
Mm. They want you to be happier than what you are. And I'm not saying you should be. So I think sometimes reflecting and being like, oh, they'd be devastated to see me this devastated.
Yeah, they would be. They would be, yeah. Because absolutely.
They wouldn't want to have hurt you like that with their loss.
No.
Yeah. So, and all those new things isn't because the grief is gone, but it's because the heart is capable of holding more than one thing at once.
Yes.
And I think people really talk about that when you have another child. So when you have your first one, you're like, oh my God, how can I possibly have any more room in my chest?
Yes.
For more love. And then you have another child and you're like, oh my goodness, okay. Somehow you just make room for it.
Yeah.
So that's the same when it comes to grief. Like, you can feel like grief is taking up all of the space in your heart, but then you'll start having these new experiences, these new feelings of joy, and you'll be making room for that in there because your heart will expand to take that on. So if you're listening today and carrying grief, I want to leave you with this thought. You don't have to rush. You don't have to be strong all the time. You don't have to justify why something still hurts. Grief is not a sign that you're failing. It's a sign that something mattered. And while grief changes us, it also reminds us of our capacity to love, because every grief story starts with a love story. Thank you for spending today with me today on The Check-In Show with Sally, and take care of yourselves and each other.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks, Bowen. No worries. And thanks, Rocky. Catch you next month.
Coming back in, oh my goodness, it's already June. So obviously I'm coming back in July. And actually I'm usually the first week of the month. However, that's school holidays.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be away. So we might need to have a chat about whether
no worries. We'll let everyone know when you're back next.
Sounds good, but keep an ear out for me.
And if you've got any ideas what you would like to chat about,
let us know. In.
Yeah.
I'd love to be doing, a show based on what the people are looking for.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, Sally. Thank you.
No
Thanks,
worries.
Bowen. See ya.
Thank you.
The voice of Bowen, 95.1 GEM FM.